Welcome back to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends over at Gooder. Sunglasses are a necessity. It's summer. Nothing kicks off summer quite like the U.S. Open. And we're here this week at Brookline, and one of the things that I made sure to pack was my pair of Gooders. These are great sunglasses. They are polarized lenses. They have golf-specific lenses. They are non-slip, and best of all, they carry a relatively reasonable price point. So the nice thing about this is you can mix and match. You can get a bunch of different styles, and they are high-quality sunglasses. You know, the same type of quality you're going to get from an expensive pair, but for an affordable rate. If you use the promo code TFE, you will get 15% off your entire order at Gooder.com. That's Gooder.com, and use the promo code TFE at checkout for 15% off your order.
I miss a green, for example. I'm already upset. When I find my ball in the bunker, I'm really upset. And when I find my ball in a
fried egg,
the dreaded
fried egg lie, I'm about ready to run off the golf course.
Today's episode, I am joined by No Laying Up's Tron Carter. He makes his long-awaited return to the Fried Egg Podcast. Tron and I were in Grand Rapids. This is recorded the morning after our collaborative event with No Laying Up at the Mines Golf Club. Tron and I sat down to talk about the U.S. Open. So we each came up with, I believe, five things. I think we got five things each and talked really, I mean, at this point, with everything going on in the men's sport, with the LIV Golf Tour, the Saudi Golf League, however you prefer to say it, obviously this is a little bit different major championship than most. I think so much of the oxygen and so much of the attention in the golf world is going to be centered around, you know, the LIV and who's next and what's next for the tour. And obviously it's kind of like a political chess match out there. So we talked about that as well as other, big storylines at Brookline, a lot about the course and then about some of the big names that are there. So without further ado, here is Tron Carter from No Laying Up. You're going home? Going back to Boston?
I am. Yeah, going back to Boston. Went up for the media day a couple weeks ago. There was no leaves on the trees yet, which was jarring. It's been, you know, mid-90s in Florida for the last 2 months. Kind of forgot how late the winter and spring creeps into summer up there. But yeah, well, it'll be good to be back.
Just wait till Rochester next year.
Oh, God. I'm hoping for absolute carnage. Like, you know.
Are you hoping for snow in the practice round?
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Be fantastic. Andy, have you spent much time in Boston?
Just a little. I need to explore. I don't think next week's going to be the week to explore. You have this like idea. It's like, oh, I'm going to be a week in Boston. And then it's like, well, I got to the media center at 7 and then I finished work at like 9. So
I think the logistics are going to be very, very, very challenging for them. There's only like 3 ways to get on and off property. The parking is out at Boston College. Like, I think I'm going to take the T. I'm going to take the Metro.
I heard that like Boston at one point knew that they needed to fix all their roads and make them make more sense. Like the first time I went to Boston, I was trying to get to Brookline and I was driving in a circle for literally 25 minutes and it was driving me insane. I couldn't figure it out.
It gets weird back behind Fenway and Kenmore and everything. Like there's a stream back there.
That's exactly the area. And I just like kept going in this circle. And it's funny. I was telling somebody about it. And they're like, oh, yeah, you know, the city knew back in the day that they needed to fix the roads. And they just said, you know what? Fuck the outsiders. The people that live here know how to get around. And we aren't going to make it easier for other people. And I think that's like the perfect sentiment of Boston.
It's our most European American city. It's super European. It's a great place to live. It's a great place to walk. Like it's a walking city. And then they did try to fix the roads a little bit when they did the big dig. And they spent like, you know, $25 billion on that, which doesn't seem like as much money now, but at the time it was just remarkable.
It's a really cool city. I'm excited to be there. Even you know, I need to make some time to get away. What are you looking forward to at this year's U.S. Open?
Gosh, I think first things first, I'm looking forward to Lady J potentially returning to Fenway to the line drive seats.
Justine and Patrick. Wait, are the Red Sox in town?
They are. They're playing the A's, I think, and then I don't know who's in town on the weekend, but yeah, there's like a 6 or 7 game homestand.
That's and then the Celtics. They got the Celtics. You know, maybe they get courtside seats and they get mad because you know a player could crash into them. You know?
Sweaty player crashes into them.
This is a big week for Justine and Team Reed.
Yeah, they're making the move to live. I'm a little bit worried for her safety if she starts chirping at, you know, Norman or MBS for setup stuff, for draw stuff. But I guess it's a shotgun start, so there's no good draw or bad draw, right?
Pins, though.
Pins, and then, like, if, you know, I guess the first round, like, it's kind of luck of the draw if you're teeing off on one or 10 or 15, right?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing about LIV, right? It's like... The shotgun start works in a way that everybody's playing, but there are different stretches of the golf course that are harder or easier than other ones. And it doesn't, like, they need to figure out how to, like, account for that.
The fact that somebody can come from, like, one or two groups back, but their team, like, they're starting on two or three, and they have to go and finish on one or two, and they're potentially going to win the golf tournament, it's insane to me.
And they send those things out to pick them up and drive them back.
the London taxis.
So Lady J is your number one. The first, I would say, one of the things I'm thinking about is like, what if Pat Reed or a LIV player wins?
Yeah, I'm kind of rooting for it, to be honest. Like in a perverse, sick way. Like I'm, you know, obviously way out on LIV, and I think it's terrible for our game. But like, man, like chaos theory. Like let's just make it completely nuts.
Yeah, like what is the response? Like is it less celebrated if like what if DJ or Phil, you know, when you talk about like
I mean Phil's not gonna win. Like
yeah, he's not.
Terrible golf course for him.
Well the thing is nobody expected him to win at Kiowa.
Or the British Open.
Yeah. The thing about it is like with like DJ and Reed or you know, one of their bigger players, the tour, and obviously this is a USGA championship, but the tour has poured so much money into promoting these guys. I mean, golf is a superstar driven game. The tour, I think, like somewhat understands that, but like they do understand it in the way they promote these guys. Yeah. Right. And like DJ, a lot of their play has earned them, you know, the superstardom, but the tour also like promotes and like creates stars somewhat with like their social media, their, you know, their commercials, all that. This might be the first major where we have a winner and you hear like crickets from the PGA Tour.
Well, what about, they'll probably be tweeting about, you know, FedEx Cup standings afterwards or whatever. And yeah, Scotty's still number one in the FedEx Cup or I think that plus... If guys like if somebody knocks off two in a row, it'd be awesome. And like they're leading the FedEx Cup technically, but they're not a PGA Tour member.
Scotty might be so far in front that
that's true.
Nobody could be. Well, I mean, Zalatoris was that last year.
Yeah,
He was what 13th in the FedEx Cup, but not listed,
not eligible.
Yeah,
I mean, anybody that hasn't gone yet that you're anticipating, you're just shocked they haven't gone yet.
Yeah, I mean, number one for me, and I meant to write this in like one of our like little round tables or something. Like I don't understand how he hasn't gone yet is Rory Sabatini.
I tweeted the same thing the other day. It it blows my mind.
Like, of all the people, and what part of me thinks, like, Slugger has dealt with everybody, you know, and maybe he's advising them and be like, listen, you guys get anybody I can handle. I can handle P. Reed. I can handle Justine.
I can't do Sabo.
I can't do Sabatini. He yells at volunteers. You know, that to me, this is a man that switched his citizenship.
Maybe,
you know?
They haven't met his number, like Kokrak, which is insane. Kokrak's holding out for more because they haven't met his number. Kokrak's betting on himself.
I don't understand what's going on with Kokrak and the Golf Saudi logo.
I just don't understand what's going on with Kokrak in general. But
he's just a Northeast Ohio boy, just, you know, trying to get paid. What about you?
I'm shocked that, yeah, I mean, Sabatini, but like, as far as top shelf players, no offense to Rory.
He's low Rory a lot of weeks.
Team Rose. Although I, from everything I'm hearing, it sounds like Team Rose is probably going this week. And Paul Casey.
Yeah. Because I had heard Paul Casey was like actively recruiting at Riviera.
Yeah. And it sounds like Cantlay sounds like the most miserable guy to have in all the pack meetings, because he thinks everybody's, you know, coming out to see him and they're worth, you know, 5-6x what they're making right now. And so he's been just vociferous in all the pack meetings, just insufferable, like, you know, getting on Jay about all this stuff. And it's like, yo, man, like, I think you're part of the problem. Like, you're not one of these guys like Rory or Spieth or Rahm or JT who, like, people are coming out to watch, and like, you're not driving ratings.
I think he's got the right attitude, though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I think Monahan should lose his job personally.
Yeah. I mean, they seem to have underestimated this thing from the start, and it seems like they actually are still underestimating it
somehow.
And it doesn't seem, it's not going to go away anytime soon. These guys have 4-year contracts.
That brings me to my second thing that I'm excited for. Mike Wann's presser. I think it's on Wednesday. You know, it's time for like some people in golf leadership to step up to the plate and like have a press conference. Jay Monahan's had 2 press conferences this whole year. He's like, he's invisible. Like the house is on fire and he is just, you know, nowhere to be found.
You should go on CNBC again.
The markets are taking a dump right now too. He's just, you know, it's like, I think I'm excited for Mike Wann to answer questions and about their, you know, because they came out this past week and said, hey, we're not banning these guys, at least for this event. And I'm sure they'll do some wonky shit with the OWGR.
That's the thing I think is, like, the Opens are in this position where they, in their name, it's Open.
You can't really discriminate against someone based on what tour they're playing.
Yeah, and like, you can't be like, hey, you know, you're supposed to have a 5-year exemption because you won a major, but that's not good anymore. And then the OWGR is kind of in the same position, because like, if you compromise your ranking, your official world golf rankings, then are you the official world golf rankings? Like,
some would say they're already compromised with the manipulation and
they might be getting rid of that with the devaluing. But it also feels like they're kind of trying to game against the Asian Tour, which is like, I think the Asian Tour has, like, you know, outside of LIV, and has the most to gain from all of this, because they could become the minor leagues of LIV.
Yeah.
You know, and then the European Tour could just,
your guy Pelly needs to do something drastic, I think.
He might along with Jay Monahan need to exit, you know, stage left, just quietly, you know. Just leave his glasses and
yeah, if the majors like decide to self diminish, it kind of feels like a waste, right? Especially like the Masters, because it's already a limited field. 7 of the last 13.
And if you're the Masters, why do you want to pick the fight with Saudi Arabia at this point?
Yeah. And like, the Masters, historically, like, they've taken pleasure in like dunking on the tour and like treating the tour like the little brother. And now they seem like they're tight and they're close and everything, which is kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
So, and like, I don't know, the tour is in such a tenuous spot, and that's before we even get to the, like, them potentially losing lawsuits, and like, even when these lawsuits are going, there's going to be temporary injunctions, I'm sure, that like allow guys to play both tours.
Well, that's the thing. They have a, if you do the, if they follow the guidelines of it,
yeah,
there's a 28 day waiting period for an appeal. And during that period, apparently, so if somebody gets suspended, they can appeal. They have 14 days to appeal. And then, like, so like Ian Poulter, who didn't resign. And the way they, you know, the language of that memo that Monahan sent out, if you resigned, it doesn't seem like you're going to be suspended, because it said it had like language that effectively addressed the players that didn't resign.
Mm-hmm.
And then it said, we've recognized the resignations. And so the players that didn't resign have, they can appeal, and then they can play
during the appeal,
the appeal.
Yeah.
So I could see Bryson, you know, cause he didn't resign, I don't think.
But he got dropped by Rocket Mortgage,
yeah.
Cooking loans. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, Tiger's got to just be so pissed. Like, Tiger, you know, turned down, what, close to $1 billion, I guess, from him. And
well, like, I kind of think Tiger needs to be, like, the commissioner.
Possibly, yeah. Maybe Steiny's the commissioner.
They need somebody that, and this is where the Patrick Cantlay discussion, they need somebody that thinks about this as the way a superstar would think about it, right? Because that's what the war's over. I think Liv understands, like,
it's Peter Malnati versus Rory, whether Rory wants to admit that or not.
And Liv, I think, like, they probably know that they only need like 10 superstars. And before anybody's like, oh, Phil's not a superstar anymore, he finished second in the PIP. And yeah, that's kind of what matters more than results on a golf course, right? It's like who a fan recognizes, and that's what golf has been about for years.
I mean, there's people that work, you know, I was talking to somebody the other day that was, they're like a, you know, head pro at a golf club around here in Michigan. They had no idea what any of this was about. They're like, yeah, what's going on with this Saudi league or whatever? Like, is Phil really going? And like, that's somebody in the golf thing. Like, my dad texted me, he's like, yeah, like, what are the Saudis doing? Like, I haven't really followed any of this, but this is crazy, right? And it's like, I think we tend to overestimate how like engaged people are in the business of golf. It's like, no, they care about the four majors, and they might watch the players too. And you know, Phil's going to tee it up, Tiger's going to tee it up, and the rest is kind of window dressing, right?
And here we're 15 minutes in. I think this is like the big story of the week, though, is even major championships. This is such a big story in the sport that it's the story of the major, which is wild. Like, I'm interested to see, you know, obviously Phil's presser on Monday morning, but also like the thing that's going to happen is like, if these two LIV guys play a practice round with this guy that's not a LIV guy, obviously
people,
like,
are going to read into that
immediately. There's going to be speculation. Is so-and-so going to LIV? Like, if Rom plays with, you know, somebody that's Pablo Larrazabal, because maybe they're friends.
Or Puig.
Yeah.
I don't think Puig's in the field, but, you know.
I mean, and that's what we got. So I'm moving to more interesting things. The course, I think, is going to be, obviously, any U.S. Open course is like kind of storyline 1A or 1B.
Are you worried that the USGA is going to keep doing this touchy-feely, warm and fuzzy, let's be nice to the players approach? Or,
I, you know, Garrett always talks about this, and Garrett, I think, does a good job. Like, he reads the history and everything. He just did that Open Doctor.
Yeah, that's great.
And you know, I think he kind of compartmentalizes it. We have like waves of essentially set up people, and we're in the Bodenhammer era. Like, right, we just came out of the Mike Davis era, you know, and now we're in the Bodenhammer era.
Yeah.
And it's just it's a unique era and setup, and it's a very friendly one. And I kind of think it's gone back to thick rough,
wider fairways, but thick rough off those wider fairways.
Yeah, and really thick rough around the greens.
Yeah,
you know, no more short grass. It's like a reaction.
I do think there's going to be some spots here this week with some short grass, you know, around, because the greens are tiny.
Tiny.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, it'll be interesting. Like, the thing I don't like, I always like, if you want to test people, like, why do they have thick rough on the backs of greens?
Like, if you go over the green at a US Open, like, it should roll like 60 yards.
It's Velcro. To me, it almost like it pads it, right? Like, I think like the thing that
it's like a bumper in bowling. You know, you're gonna just get bumped back into the lane.
I would love like a move away. Like, the US Open to me always feels really uniform. It's like we're gonna have like when they had the, you know, intermediate rough. It's like we're gonna have 7 yards of that on every fairway, every hole, and then it goes to this. It's like, why can't we just like set up a golf course and be like, you know, the right rough over here, we're just gonna have pretty short, but it's a terrible angle.
Like that's a great, like, you don't want to be over there. Yeah. So you know,
and the left rough over here is really long. It doesn't need to be the same length on both sides. It, you know, we could have short rough over the green and long rough short left of the green.
I feel the same way about bunkers. Like, that was something in Australia. We went down there. Like, they, you know, you miss right of the screen, there's plenty of sand in that bunker. You miss left of the screen, there's no sand and you're completely fucked. Like, it's, that's a very, like, there should be varying degrees of penalty.
Yeah. And then also it lends itself to like the person that's most prepared.
Yeah.
And the team, like the caddy and the player that know certain spots, all of a sudden, like, it's not, when it's just thick rough, it's really, my issue with it, it
just dumbs it down.
And it, a lot of it can be attributed to luck.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, I got good lies.
Well, and it's like the way that, you know, everything works these days too, is like, these guys are so long and straight. So it just favors the bigger hitters that much more, because they're hitting a, you know, a 54 degree wedge out of it versus somebody like, you know, Sabatini is hitting a 7 iron out of it. You know, like, that's a massive, you know, especially with like, I anticipate like the greens are going to be super firm. It's been a really
nice weather
lead up here. There's a ton of slope.
The fairways are rockets out there too. If assuming they get the weather to cooperate, I mean, the ball bounces and there's some contour in them that make a lot of those fairways play, like, they feel, they can look kind of wide, but effectively they play really small because of, they run a lot and then they just have some contour in them where if you hit the wrong side of something, it just will shoot some direction. But, you know, that's the thing. They're speaking to your like irregularities thing. We have an event at Soul Park every year. And the eighth hole there's this, been there?
Yeah.
There's this just devastatingly deep bunker left of the green. But it also has like, it has so much, you feel like you're in like a sand quarry when you go into it.
You feel
it.
Like you're like, on the beach.
Yeah, there's so much sand in it. But like, you know, under no circumstances can you miss in that bunker. And I think that's really cool.
And then that affects your strategy for the entire hole where you're like, you're playing away from it. And then you basically get, you get worried about getting your hand caught in the cookie jar.
Yes.
Right? And I think there's something to be said for that, where you start playing away from it and then there's so much that goes into, you know, hole locations, you know, in kind of response to that. And yeah, I think it's, you know, I just hope like they don't, because that was my concern at like Wingfoot, or I thought Torrey was good last year. Like, the setup was fine. Like, but trying to get the greens bouncy from the very start, like the whole ramp up Thursday, Friday. And I know some of it's pace of play and you got to get however many guys through, you know, the first 36 holes or whatever. But like, I think it's been a little bit too toothless the last couple opens on Thursday, Friday.
Yeah. And I think like the USGA doesn't want this identity because they hate the player backlash. And I think social media fuels this, where the players have their own platform to go. You know, we saw it with General Patton Kizzire at the PGA. And you know, Hatton's complained at both majors this year. But
some of these guys are going to complain any which way. So you might as well do
your
what
identity,
you want.
Part of your identity is the players aren't on the PGA Tour this week.
Yeah.
They're coming, and the USGA is kind of the U.S. Open is the place where players have to kind of like, part of the challenge is dealing with the emotions of feeling like you're getting screwed over.
Yeah.
And having some like, I like
it's
the
a
idea.
Mental examination.
Yes, I like the idea of a course that gets a little under. And I think Brookline could do that because of it's really hard.
There's so much cool quirk too. Yeah. Like I was talking to a caddy last night about it, and I was like, dude, like it kind of reminds me of Birkdale a little bit. And then like there's a lot of up and down. There's a lot of movement up the hills. Like 14, that par five. It might be the only par five in the world that matters anymore. Like I think
both the par fives are
like
really
cool. Like 660 up the hill, and it like even if you're laying up, you have to hit like a 230-yard shot up to this tabletop area, and then you miss the green like short, and it's rolling back down the hill like 80 yards.
Yeah, that 14th hole is I think like Pebble 14 is another good par five.
Yeah.
And for U.S. Open golf, but this one is like Pebble 14. I feel like on kind of steroids,
like bigger green, but much more like severe upslope.
Yeah,
all the way up to it.
Effectively, if you don't hit the fairway there, you're laying up short of this rock cliff where you won't be able to see anything.
And you have like 210 into a green with like a Shinnecock style like false front on there.
Yeah, and you won't be able to see. There's a tree, and yeah, both par fives are going to be really fun to watch. I think that's the other thing is like there's some just truly great holes out there, like 3, 4 on the really 2 through 6 is going to be an amazing stretch of golf to watch. And that to me is probably the coolest part of the whole course. And I think the par threes in general are really one of the strongest aspects of the golf course. But then, 10 obviously is a truly, it's a converted par five into a par four. That green is insane.
It's so quintessentially New England where you're driving over these exposed rock outcroppings to kind of a blind area, over this little hill, but you can bail out down the left, but then your angle sucks into the green. Like, there's so many guys that are going to be defeated before like the first nine's even over because they can't handle the blind shots and some of the quirk of the place.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like it's one of my favorite tee shots is the 12th tee shot out there, and it's just like it's blind. That it is not a typical U.S. Open course, and none of these guys outside of the guys that played the USAM have really seen it, which I think is one of the cool things about this year. With Southern Hills being basically a new course, here being, you get like some, it's not going to Pebble where they see every year or Torrey. Like that's one of the things that diminishes, I think, the majors at when they have them at Pebble or Torrey.
They feel
like
stock or
we see it every year, and it's obviously not the same type of thing, but this one we haven't seen in most golf fans. I mean, I remember the Ryder Cup barely. Most golf fans have never seen this course.
Even the Ryder Cup, like that 17th hole, that green is unrecognizable.
Yeah.
They've brought that thing back out so much. There's some really, really cool pins there. Like that's such a cool hole. Mm-hmm. Great driving hole. That closing stretch is great. Like the 14 through 17 and 14 through 18 are just fantastic. I mean, 18 green is there's not that many pinnable spots there.
It's gonna be so neat to watch that chips if they do that front pin, because they've recaptured the front and it's all unpinnable space, but it's a really cool you might see some really neat chips that roll up the hill, come back and like potentially in.
Yeah.
Like that hole can yield some pretty creative recovery. And then 16, everybody will shit on 16 compared to the other par threes.
16's cool, like super understated back in that little corner, and the green is awesome.
The green, might be the best green on the golf course. The back half, they use a back pin there. It's a long par three. The back half runs away on that green. And if you land it like middle to back, it's just shooting off. It might jump out like all the way out of the property.
I thought I aced it when we were playing the media day. I was off the back of the green and like landed it pin high.
Yeah.
And just shot forward.
Now for a quick word from our sponsor, the USGA. As you would know if you've been listening to this podcast, the US Open is this week, and I've got great news for you. From June 16th through the 19th, there will be wall-to-wall coverage of golf on usopen.com, NBC, USA, and Peacock. This year, for the 122nd US Open at the Country Club at Brookline, 9,265 players entered and only 156 qualified. And obviously, one will win. This is a great championship. So tune in on NBC, USA, and Peacock, as well as usopen.com. And I think everything's shaping up for a great championship. So now back to Tron Carter. So it's a neat golf course. I think I'm really interested to see what the public thinks, because I think it's got enough visuals and eye candy to. So, I think one of the things that happens is at like a Wingfoot, like if you know what you're looking at, like the greens are so cool, but if you don't, it's flat.
It doesn't have a whole lot of dog legs.
Yeah. And you don't have like that, like beautiful, but I think
there's so much more, there's so much more elevation.
Yeah.
And there's so much more context and like texture there, I think, but that comes back to, is NBC going to do it justice? Like some of my favorite shots of the U.S. Open are like the wide two or three hole pans. Like they do a really good job of this at Oakmont, right? Of like you see several holes in the same shot, and you see like truly how you know dramatic some of these elevation changes are. And Fox got really good at doing that towards the end of their run. And I'm fearful that, because I think NBC has a tendency to just use like a bunch of tower cams that tend to look down on everything and like wash out any sort of, you know, intrigue or any sort of like, you know, severe elevation changes. It makes everything look flat. So, because I mean, like 15 is a great example as well. Like tee off down that hill over the road, and then great green there as well. And it feels quintessentially New England. You got to go through like from 14 green to 15 tee. You have to go through somebody's backyard. He's like leasing them like the land this week to, you know, basically avoid the crowds, you know, back around that tee box. It's going to be like quirky and cool back in that little corner.
Yeah. I think one thing that I think, I thought they did a really good job at the women's US Open. With those,
the drone shots, awesome.
Were extraordinary, like next level stuff that I haven't really seen. And I'm hoping a lot of that carries over to this week. Because that visual experience was really good.
We haven't talked about the shorty little par three yet.
I'm excited. What are your thoughts?
I think it's great. I mean, it's just a little drop shot. Especially if there's a front pin there, it's going to be wild.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. It's one of those shots that feels really easy until you miss it.
Yeah.
And then when you miss it,
you got
like
scar tissue.
Yeah. And I in the media day, I was playing pretty decent. I was hitting the ball well, and I thought a really good shot there. I ended up just short. I ended up walking away with a six. Like it's really, really treacherous if you miss the green in the wrong spot. And it's easy to do when you get that wedge. Let's talk about some of the players. I think one of my big storylines is, can somebody get two majors in a year?
We'll see. I mean,
like we're set up for, we got two guys that like, doesn't matter where they play, that won the first two.
Yeah.
You know, Scotty and JT, obviously, I think you put them in the, both of them as like the, you know, one of the favorites. I think, you know, it'd be great. I think if somebody won two majors this year, and because we have so many guys with one major, you know, and so many, and JT obviously getting to three majors would be huge for, he's at the point now with two majors, like every major he adds, he's moving up in the echelon of great players, like dramatically. Yeah. Right. And for Scotty, like you're talking about number one player in the world, having a historic year, he gets a second major. Now, all of a sudden you're talking about like one of the greatest seasons ever. Right.
Yeah.
In the modern era, you know, he'd be at six wins, two majors, like just there. And then he's still got a lot of tournaments left. So that's kind of one of the things I'm watching is, with these guys. And you talked about it earlier, like what if a live guy rattles off the next two, you know,
the like both it's like simultaneously awful and hilarious, you know, especially with St. Andrews next.
Yeah.
Too. I mean, it's, you know, it's going to be, I think it's two courses that encourage guys to play a little bit creatively. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I still like, I think there's something to be said for being in the fairway, hitting a bunch of greens. It kind of reminds me of like the Marion U.S. Open where Justin Rose won, but like Billy Horschel hit like all 18 greens one of the rounds. Like I think Horschel sets up really well. I think like a guy like Fleetwood, like he's not the longest guy in the world, but as long as the putter stays hot, like Fleetwood, just really good iron play, you know, distance control. It feels kind of like a Spieth golf course to That's me too.
One of the things with the, yeah, especially the way Spieth's driving it, it's going to be really hard. And there, to me, like, because of how much contour is in the greens, I didn't think about this, but like, it might actually favor a guy like Fleetwood, who's not the best putter, but you know, a lot of times you're 25 feet, kind of you're kind of like lagging.
Exactly.
Putts. Like yeah. you've got, like I had two great shots on 10. Couldn't have hit two better shots. And I was like 20 feet away and I'm hitting a putt and I'm like,
it was like an auto three putt.
Yeah, I was legitimately like, where do I need to hit this so that I have like a 4-footer
yeah.
to make par and walk away from here? And I think a lot of those greens, because of that old school, like it's not, Wingfoot has sections
yeah.
and you get into those sections and they're kind of flat. I feel like the country club just has a lot of slope all over the yeah. place.
And it blends into, like yeah. the sections blend into one another.
And part of that, like they're really cool greens, but they don't look really cool from a photograph because it's just like kind of like a continuous yeah. slope with like pockets of different.
And they're framed by so much rough around them.
Uh-huh. So the greens don't like pop visually, but they are very cool greens and they're like treacherous in a different way than the Masters or a Wingfoot or, you know, even a Southern Hills where you could see these yeah. distinct sections. So when you're 25 feet away, you might be lagging.
Yeah.
And you think like Shinnecock in a way had some of that too. You know, it's not like you think about Shinnecock screens and they're, you know, Flynn did a lot of work here and Flynn did a lot of work at Shinnecock. And that's Flynn golf courses. And I think the country club fits this is like, you're hitting from these really terrible lies, like, or just really weird lies to greens that are like heavily contoured in one direction. And it becomes about
being on the proper side yeah. of the fairway or,
and that's really difficult when the lies aren't perfect.
Yeah. Well, and it basically makes, you know, like, it's like the smart golf fans of like clapping for a shot that hits the middle of the green this week. It's like on some of these holes, like if you're coming out of the rough and you're hitting the green, like more power to you, like kudos, because that's gonna be, so that's why like I love, you know, I'm not sure Cam Smith is like, I don't think he's gonna drive it well enough, and I think he, you know, he likes short grass, and I think some of his flair and imagination around the greens is gonna be a little bit neutered by like just gouging out of thick rough around greens. But like a guy like Shane Lowry, I think yeah. is another one, like guys that maybe it's just, you know, European, you know, Irish, British guys that kind of can you know, play with some imagination and some creativity.
Shane Lowry is just a great hard golf course player.
Yeah.
Right. It Cam Smith to me, it's going to get lost, but like that finish at Southern Hills, he led the field tee to green and he was abysmal with the putter.
Yeah.
Like that was a major that I'm guessing like he probably thinks about as like, I hit the ball. That's got to be one of the most frustrating things is when you hit the ball well enough, you're one of the greatest putters
and it just goes cold.
The tour.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that, you know, and he played obviously really well. Like this year, to me, like that T12th at Southern Hills was a really good T12. And obviously the Masters, he was the only one that had really a chance yeah. to win other than Scotty.
I think another guy that, like, going back to our conversation about this kind of neutralizing the putting or almost freeing a guy up a little bit. Big Tone's playing well.
He's trending.
He's so good off the tee. Like he can hit that, you know, bunty 3-wood down there, like 310, and just good iron player and lagging putts around and making a bunch of pars and then picking off, you know, a couple birdies here and there. just, you know, keep an eye out for Big Tone.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, you might not have to putt great this week.
Yeah. I think Max is like just good iron. Like, I'm looking at good iron players who are pretty straight off the tee and resilient, like mentally. Like, cause like, I mean, Ted Scott posted a video of it this morning. The fairway on 9, like, you know, that's one of the hesitations I have with Billy Horschel. It's like, you know, if he gets completely like rolling down the hill on 14
major ever.
Or 9, like on 9, like you can hit it down even the left side of the fairway and the ball goes into the lake on the right.
It's it brings me to Rory and Spieth, right? Those are two guys that I don't know if Rory can just keep it together.
I just don't trust him. Yeah. But Spieth, I feel like it's like, I followed Spieth out at Colonial and it's like, I don't know how he gets through day to day life. Cause it's so like between the pre-shot routine and then the missed shorties, but then he'll make a 30 footer. Like it's a really exhausting way to play golf.
I think that's why people like him so much.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, he's just not a good putter right now.
No.
He's hitting the ball the best he's ever hit in his career.
But he's kind of got the Morikawa thing going where like, or like the Zalatoris thing where like he's not a good putter from, you know, 4 to 10 feet, but he's still making a bunch of putts from like 25 feet.
It's like
the irrational confidence.
It's a Zalatoris thing too.
NBA, you know, it's like a J.R. Smith kind of thing where he's like irrationally confident. He's pulling up from everywhere and it's like somebody's got to heat check him, but I think he can get on one of those runs and just string him together. But I also think this is a good major for him because there's less emphasis on making a bunch of birdies. You're just trying to stack up pars and pick off a birdie here and there. Like if you shoot 68 or 69, that's great. You don't have to go out and shoot 65 or 66.
Yeah.
You know,
it's I mean, you start to look at the players. You brought up Morikawa. It's kind of been a down year for him, Hovland. Like the guys that everybody was talking about, John Rahm.
Yeah.
All the, you know, Rahm obviously won in Mexico, but that was like a
Grupo Salinas.
The field was abysmal and it wasn't really like, it wasn't one of the, like, that was one of those, like, oh, if good players were in this field, that would have been a T10.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or a T4. But the thing about, it's been kind of a down year. I actually like wonder if the live stuff's been like a distraction because those are like that going into the year premier guys. And now we've got like kind of Cam Smith has become a premier guy.
Yeah.
And Scottie Scheffler's become a premier guy who wasn't thought of at the beginning of the year. And I wonder, could like the live distraction actually be, you know, a real thing? Because you see it with other sports like trade rumors and like having to make these big, like it weighs on guys and some guys don't handle it well. And I wonder, like, these are young players that maybe aren't dealing well with like having to make these big decisions.
It's like the NBA free agency or NBA trade deadline. It's like Woj bombs and you know, what's Shams reporting, right? I think something else, I'm looking forward to them to see what they do with the pairings. Because it's, you know, going back to what we were saying about practice rounds
or
whatnot.
They like to get dicey too.
They like to do some cheeky shit, right? Like, remember when they did the fat pairing a few years ago?
Burly boys.
That was outrageous.
I mean, it'd be amazing if they put Rory with Phil.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or JT with Phil.
Yeah.
Like, 100%. You know, the guys that have just like demolished Phil and they put him with them. Like, it'd be pretty mean spirited. But hey, I just thought of a name. Hideki.
Is he hurt?
I don't know.
How long ago does it feel like that Hideki hit that 3-wood at Sony? I mean, that feels like it was 4 years ago.
That's true.
It's like less than 5 months ago.
And that's like the thing is like, you talk about a guy that's really accurate, tee to green, great iron player, little bit bulky putter. Maybe this is a spot for
Sungjae, same thing.
I mean, that's, I think, one of the footholds of this live. They obviously have the Asian tour.
Yeah.
But if they pick off some of the big names of Asia,
Yeah. Takumi Kanaya, things of that nature.
Like, you know, you know, if Hideki, the tour then loses kind of a lot of its global presence. Hideki might be the biggest name that nobody's talking
about. The Zozo or the CJ Cup becomes a hell of a lot less valuable.
Yeah, because you know? Like you don't have the big name players, right? And that's like, it's hard to do this pod right now and talk about like the player analysis without that being the second part of it, right? It's like, how is this guy going to compete out here? But, you know, also this.
What's your winning score?
I kind of feel like we've gotten into like the 6 to 10 range.
That's exactly where I'm at. Yeah. All right. So what, like,
I've heard though from numerous people and having played out there that this is like legitimately the hardest with Shinnecock, the hardest golf course. Yeah. So if we're going to get an even par tournament,
it's something like this.
This is a place like Shinnecock that will get it. It just really depends on like how much they want to push it. I think if they push it and put it close to the edge, it will be that type of a test. Like that'll be the type of, you know, score that you'll get.
I'm gonna check my weather app to see what we're gonna get.
You've got the Primo weather app. Windy. You're a big weather guy.
Windy. Huge weather guy. But yeah, like while I'm looking that up, what are your five things?
I think we
covered?
We got LIV, we got the course. Can somebody get two in a year? And then I had Rory and Spieth. And I think just the young guys, like, I think there are a lot of guys, and this is almost like a storyline because of the way golf is. And I've talked about it before. But like, we have a lot of young guys that are really highly ranked that have never done shit in a major.
Yes.
Like, Hovland's one of them. Patrick Cantlay is the ultimate case here. He's number three in the world.
Empty calories, man.
And you start to go down the list, and it's like Sam Burns. Obviously, like, it's hard because these guys are having such success so young, and it's like they have such a small sample size. But, you know, another guy that hasn't really done much in a major in a while is Xander. You know, he's up there high in the rankings.
What's Xander been doing lately?
Yeah.
Just even on tour. Like, what's his...
Billy Horschel's one, right? Billy has never done anything. I mean, it'd be great to see Billy outside of Marion, you know, which was a long time ago, play well. I'm kind of back in on Billy.
I mean, Billy's like, he's an acquired taste, but he's also, it's just better when Billy's involved. Like, he's just such an outrageous.
He's a content machine.
It's, you know? Crazy.
He's throwing clubs. He's gonna be saying, "Oh, Billy." He's
talking way too much in the post-round presser.
I'll never forget. I was playing with a tour player, and I asked him, like, "Who's like when you see the draw come out? Who's your least favorite guy to see in your group?" And he goes, "Oh, without a doubt, Billy. Just never
shuts up.
Yeah. It's just, and I just can't handle that. Like I think Billy games people without knowing he's gaming people." Is the thing, like, that's why he should be on these Ryder Cup teams. Is that
totally
nobody? He's not even intentionally doing it. Like the "oh buddy,"
it's not malicious.
The buddy stuff.
Hey bud, great job, bud.
I mean, he won, and he said, "Yeah, thanks, buddy." You know, like,
you kind of sold me on Xander. You know, we'll throw out the Byron Nelson because that was an absolute travesty. But he finished T5 there, T13 at Southern Hills, T18 at Memorial. Like, he's playing good golf. I think he's one of those guys that, like, he drives it really well. Good iron player, can play creatively. You know, maybe it's his time.
It would. Internet critics would be, you know, Xander's like a hot topic. He's like a. It's one of those, like, how do you... He's like a Democrat-Republican kind of thing.
It's a divisive
thing.
Issue.
How do you feel about Xander? Middle ground.
Xander might be like gun control or like gay marriage or something like that. It's just like a wedge issue.
Yeah. Right? That is a hot topic in America.
Yeah.
In American golf is, how do you feel about Xander Schauffele? I'm on the side of, like, you can't contend in this many majors and not be really a great player. Yeah. And but then there's like he doesn't close things out. He wins these small events is the backside of it.
I think Hovland, I'm ready for Hovland to like shit or get off the pot a little bit.
This could be actually a great Hovland course.
Because it's neutering the chipping issues. Yeah. Yeah.
The thick rough is negating those. And like you talk about Hovland is an extraordinary driver of the golf ball without being extraordinarily long.
Yeah. Totally. I think all right, who do you think freaks out? Like Hatton, is he going to make it 3 for 3 on? Because somebody's going to freak out about some of the like some of the pins are going to be outrageous just because there's no other options. And you know, I think the fairway on 9 going into the into the pond, and then there's a couple holes where like your ball's
false front on
your ball's going to roll down
on what is it 8? Yeah. False front on 8 could do it. I'm looking at the list here. I mean, we haven't even talked about Koepka. I don't even know what
I don't know
expect.
What to do with Koepka. I never know what to do with Koepka.
I would, you know,
I'm liking JT more and more.
I'd love to see a Kevin Na freak out. Goes to live. He's the head of the Ironheads. I'd love to see a Kevin Na freak out.
I always love seeing a Kevin Na.
Because he freaked out at Erin Hills. Remember, he did the crawling out of the rough thing?
Thirsty Kevin.
That could be my pick. I mean, for a freakout. Who would you... Bryson could be ripe for one.
I don't even think Bryson's engaged enough right now. Or, like, I don't think his expectations are, like, to go out and win something like this. You know? I would say... I think my money's on Billy or Hatton. Let's just keep that train rolling.
Yeah, Billy could... Who's your pick to win? You've been hot. You're like on a true heater.
Yeah, picking winners just all over the place.
You might be golf's foremost, you know, gambling expert at this point.
I even picked plays for guys this week, and I picked Lynn Grant for Randy. Lynn Grant's leading in the Scandinavian mixed. The other guy that we haven't talked about, I think this is a good course for P.
Really?
Yeah. You know, good driver of the golf ball. Now that he's out of the PXG stable, he's got that Grindworks driver in the bag.
Like, what? How is he using a Grindworks driver?
The fact that he had a PXG sponsorship without a single PXG club in the bag was remarkable. I'm going with Fleetwood.
You're taking Fleetwood?
Yeah.
Tommy boy.
How about you?
Well, I've got Scheffler. Still, I haven't picked him for my one and done league. I'm a one and done. All my picks are based around what I've done. I think obviously all around talent. But I think there's a lot of chance in this tournament because of just breaks, like, you know, lies.
It looks like we're gonna get some wind Thursday. There's it Friday, but not a whole lot on the weekend. At least
wind,
right now. The GFS
wind,
is.
Do you think
right
the
now.
Wind comes with water on the greens?
I hope not. God, I hope that nothing pisses me off more than them throwing water on the greens overnight or, you know, first thing in the morning.
You might be out there first thing in the morning monitoring.
I feel like the Buddhist monk, like lighting myself on fire on the green so they can't water it.
Did you get to 5 things? I mean,
I think I did. I like pairings, Lady J, ninth fairway, Mike Wan presser. And then that was kind of my 4 things. And then
we're
just
close
14.
Enough. There's it could be Will Zalatoris again.
Yeah. It could be trill time.
It's you know.
Where are you staying?
We're in Cambridge.
Okay.
It was hard to find a house close by. We're at the Precision Pro house, the house that rangefinders built in Cambridge. It was hard to find something in Brookline.
It's I think we're in Brookline Village, the Hilton Garden Inn.
Fancy.
Yeah, I'm a Marriott guy, so it pains me to go stay at a Hilton Garden Inn. But you know, we should meet in North End or something one night for an
Italian
meal. Yeah.
Break some bread.
There's some good places there. There's some great restaurants over in Cambridge and Somerville. That's kind of where all the really good stuff is.
I mean, Brendan's returning to Boston. This is a Boston
homecoming
of
sorts.
Boston College, you know. A notorious alum returning to Boston for the, you know, first time in a while.
He's on shaky ground as an alum, though, because I know he was a big, you know, Steve Adazio guy.
contention. It could be a contentious return.
Exactly.
Now he's just a Capitol Hill guy. He's down there, you know.
Beltway.
Yeah.
Beltway
yeah.
golfer.
Beltway. Just
is he taking the Acela up? Is he taking the train up?
I don't think so. I think he's flying. You know, he might have a kid in a bag. You know, you never know what's gonna happen. So
great airport.
Boston?
I like Logan. It's a good airport.
I don't like how far you got to go to get on an Uber.
Yeah, and then like if you want to take the train, you got to like get on the one train to go over to the other train. That's tough.
What I appreciate is the proximity to the town.
Exactly.
You know, there's nothing worse than that's like the dark stain on Denver.
Oh. Don't even get me started on Denver.
Like delightful.
The Illuminati needs to get their shit figured out.
Yeah. There's one day we'll chop up airports. I feel like there's a lot of takes. You know, there's nowhere worse than Dallas in my opinion.
Dallas is awful. It's awful. I mean, Dallas, Charlotte, Miami, like those are bad airports. They're all American hubs. Oh,
Miami's. Yeah, there's bad. All right. This was great. Great catching up. Haven't had you on the pod in a while. And we'll look for you at Boston and follow all the great stuff you guys are doing at No Laying Up. So,
thank you for having me. This was fun.
Thank you for listening to another edition of the Fried Egg Podcast. Today's episode was edited by the wonderful Meg Atkins and Garrett Morrison. Thank you, guys. And quick reminder, we've got a sale in the Fried Egg Pro Shop. It is a automatic 15% off everything except for print photography. And we have a bunch of new items in the shop. We've got some new polos. We created a really neat, you know, Brookline themed logo. It's got the squirrel with like a little top hat eating an egg instead of an acorn. So check that out. We have t-shirts, new polos, a bunch of new gear in the shop. So go give it a gander, and it's 15% off through the weekend in the shop. Everything except for print photography. So thank you for listening. We'll be back on Friday with another episode, and tune into the U.S. Open. It's going to be a great week. Thanks.